College football fans, are you ready for week one? DraftKings Sportsbook is hooking you up with a can't-miss offer to start the season strong. This week, new customers can bet just $5 on college football and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Anything can happen in college football. That's right. Your team could go from unranked to dynasty mode in just a couple of years. Change comes fast. The only thing that's a lock is great offers from the DraftKings Sportsbook. Life's more fun when you're in on the action. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code TASKMASTER, all lowercase. New customers can score $200 in bonus bets instantly when they bet just $5 on college football. Only DraftKings Sportsbook is the way to go, and use that promo code TASKMASTER, then the crown is yours. That's right. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use that promo code TASKMASTER. Own it, live it, win the crown.
We love the 1980s wrestling era when kayfabe was king and wrestling did whatever it took to protect the business. When all the territories dealt with the rise of the WWF and the NWA emerged as its greatest challenger. Imagine if there were an epic drama series based on that era, combining the corporate warfare and the family drama of Succession with the giant cast and epic storytelling of Game of Thrones. That day has come. Kings of the Ring is the first audio drama podcast based on wrestling.
Go back to your trailer, you hillbilly.
It's a fiction series about the 1980s wrestling wars and the sex, drugs, and muscles lifestyle of the 80s wrestler and the sacrifices they make for success. With guest voice acting appearances by Lainey Poffo.
I even have a good dropkick.
And AEW's RJ City.
I didn't really have that much to do.
Search Kings of the Ring from any podcast app or kingsotr.com and binge away.
Welcome to another edition here of Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I am your host, JP John Paz, from the two-man power trip of wrestling. And of course, joining me, the star of the show, the former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion, former NWA Florida Heavyweight Champion, the man behind the success of WCW, the booker behind the NWO, the Taskmaster, the Games Master, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing wonderful, John. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Now, as far as today's episode and today's focus, WCW / NWO Uncensored 1998, March 15th, 1998, from Mobile, Alabama, at the Mobile Civic Center. The attendance, 7,475. Tagline, rules are for fools. And, of course, the pay-per-view buys, 415,000. Very, very good on the buy rate. Are you shocked by that?
You took my breath away. Yes and no. Yes, because it's such an outstanding number. No, because of who was in it. Randy Savage and Hulk Hogan. two of the biggest stars in the history of wrestling. I can see that the people have followed them for years. We took all the heat they got off of Vince, and we placed them in very good positions for us, but still over 400,000. It's quite a feat.
Pretty amazing, because you think, oh, Hogan, Savage, maybe they can't draw anymore. Put those two in a cage match in 1998, and you know they drew 415,000, which is great. Basically 9 or 10 years after the big WrestleMania 5 main event of Hogan and Savage from Atlantic City, where they drew, you know, upwards of 750,000 buys, which obviously was the top cream of the crop at that point, WWF domination, and at the peak of Hogan's run there, and obviously Macho Man being the huge draw he was. But it's just pretty damn impressive from where I sit, like, wow, 415,000. So that was actually the third pay-per-view that year that would draw at least 415,000. So the other pay-per-view, of course, Super Bowl 98, the rematch of Hogan and Sting, did 415,000. This pay-per-view does 415,000. And Bash at the Beach is 600,000. I was going to say 16. It would be crazy. 600,000 buys for Hogan and Rodman against DDP and Karl Malone. So a lot of good stuff as far as pay-per-views for 98. WCW rocking and rolling. Also was a report that Havoc did 500,000 buys, but there's another report that said they only did 315,000 buys. So even then, even towards the end of the year, WCW really kicking ass with pay-per-views.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this quite a bit. We were so hot then, John, you know what I mean? Everything was rocking and rolling. And again, I've always said, the talent is like the 1927 New York Yankees. You know, how many Hall of Famers went to the Hall of Fame for the 1927 Yankees? The whole infield, and Roger didn't make the Hall of Fame, and he wasn't there then, but the whole infield, Joe DiMaggio, you know, they had six to seven guys that made the Hall of Fame. Same way here, I believe.
Now, as far as WCW NWO Uncensored, why did you guys like branding it WCW NWO?
That was, we had an outside firm that was doing the branding, and the outside firm actually was the people that branded the Oakland Raiders, and they were paid a lot of money to come up with these brand names. And that was taken out of the wrestling hands and was into the corporate side.
Did you like calling it not just WCW, but WCW NWO and having that branding all over the pay-per-views for that year?
To me, you've got to be very careful. If you brand it NWO, aren't you kind of saying that they're part of WCW?
Yep.
That's the only concern I always had. And, you know, wrestling, sometimes after a while, the lines get blurred. And that's why I've always said about it should have been the Kid, Hogan, Kevin, Scott, and maybe Scott Steiner. Once you started putting people jumping from WCW to NWO, wouldn't your contract become null and void?
Right. You would think.
Yeah. But at this time, you know, we talked about mistakes. There's one that if someone's really sat and thought about it, and it's, sometimes people will say, well, it's just wrestling. Well, if you want the people to believe and give up the willing suspension of disbelief, kind of stay in your lane.
You think of logic, you know, it's got to play a role, right? You got to have a little bit of logic in there.
Right, right.
To me, I was always thinking like, well, WWE, NWO, it's, I know it's obvious, like you're trying to get everybody kind of forget about WWF, but it's like, I don't know if you really need the NWO in there. It kind of kills the NWO's cachet a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you 1,000%.
So as far as the pay-per-views, 98, definitely one of WWE's best years, made a ton of money. And that's even going up against WWF and Steve Austin and Vince McMahon, who are doing great buys and great pay-per-views too. So that just shows you how many people were really into wrestling, but not only into it, buying these pay-per-views and how really, really invested the fans were.
Yeah, and it also shows you how strong Austin was, because basically that was the one match drawing, right? Where we had a lot of talent.
Yep. Ton of talent. Yep. And we're going to get into that talent right now, because the first match up for Uncensored, Booker T defeats Eddie Guerrero with Chavo, and he retains his WCW World Television Championship. The match goes about 11 minutes. What do you think about this one? You always kind of like to have Eddie start it off, but usually a hot opener. Another great match, Booker and Eddie.
Yeah, I mean, both became the world champions. Could you start it off any better? You know?
No.
You can't go back to Benoit and Eddie, Malenko and Eddie, Malenko and Benoit, or Eddie and Malenko. You got to give something different. And they say that style makes a fight, and their styles mesh perfectly.
During this match, Booker gets the win over Eddie when he knocks Eddie off the top rope, followed by a missile dropkick. After the match, Eddie accuses nephew Chavo of being a part of Booker T, or wanting to be on Booker T's side. Eddie then attacks Chavo from behind while he was walking up the aisle, basically cementing Eddie as a heel and keeping Chavo as a face, but really kind of, you know, pumping up Eddie as like this bitter, bitter heel.
Yeah, and people forget that Eddie drew big money as a heel in Mexico. Huge money. What was his tag team partner's name?
Art Barr?
Yeah, what were they? The Crazy Gringos?
Yeah, El Gringos Locos, the Crazy Gringos, yeah.
I mean, Eddie could work both ways, and I think this was good for Eddie.
You prefer him as a heel or as a babyface?
Either way, he's going to draw money. But as a babyface, he sold so well. But as a heel, he was vicious, so you could flip a coin.
What do you think about Chavo?
Excellent. An underrated guy. Great. You know, second generation.
I was going to say him and Eddie. I mean, they, you know, they got that chemistry, but they got that second generation thing going, both of them, obviously, and they're part of that great Guerrero family.
Mm-hmm.
The Booker T win here kind of cements him as a great television champion. But what did you think about the television championship?
Well, I had that years ago when I was a baby face. And I always wondered, did it take away from the world title? Because if you're the TV champion, I don't remember a world champion wrestling for the TV belt, do you?
No. Not that I can remember.
But it was a way to enhance a guy that gave it his all. So, rightfully so, Eddie should have got it. Booker T. They could pass that back and forth. And then the other guys that I mentioned, including Satin, Raven, there's a host of great matches you can have.
Where do you put the U.S. title with the TV title? Like, are they equal? Is U.S. title better? Like, where do you put it as far as the pecking order?
That's a hard call, John. But my call is the TV title is defended on TV most of the time. So you get a lot more exposure. And again, it kind of can confuse some people if they just sit down for the first time or not really into wrestling. They're saying, well, why is this guy the TV champion and the other guy the U.S. champion?
The next match up is Juventud Guerrero versus Conan. And Juventud defeats Conan in 10 minutes and 20 seconds. What do you think here? A little bit of an upset with Juvy Juice getting the win.
Yeah, and that was Conan's call. He thought that Juvy needed a win. And rightfully so, Juvy gave great matches. And we're trying to move him up on the card so he can work with Ray and give you that kind of incredible match that the Luchadors give.
So you wanted maybe Conan to win and he was saying for Juventud to win? Or is that both of you guys coming together?
I came to him. I said, what do you think we should do? And he explained to me why. And it made a lot of sense. And it shows that he was not a glory hound. And he did the right thing for his guys.
Man, just to me, it was like, what a big upset. Just because Conan's a pretty big name at this point. You know, he's a pretty big star for WWE. And Juvy Juice, although albeit great for the last 3 years in the Cruiserweight division, was just surprising to see him get the win.
Yeah, and I think it was one of those things that should happen on pay-per-views that it's an upset.
The fans at home not expecting it. Like I said, I wasn't expecting it at all. So you think as a booker, you need that once in a while, throw the curveball and have some upsets?
Absolutely. I mean, let's go back to Buster Douglas and Mike Tyson.
Yeah. Biggest upset of all time.
Yeah.
I think the odds of that fight were 40-1. So something like that. Yeah. It was like insane. If you bet Buster Douglas, you're probably a millionaire.
Yeah.
It's like, I think it was like put down 100 to make 400 or 40,000 or I don't know, some insane amount. I believe the odds are 40-1. So something insane if you had Buster Douglas in that one.
Yeah. And I think that people like to, I know that when I was a fan, I thought I could predict every match. And you as a fan probably thought you could too.
Yep.
So this, you went, wow, I didn't see this one coming. And I think that's a very important thing. And I keep on saying this when we talk. Do not fall in patterns. You know, shake it up. Get the people excited. And then they're excited for the whole show because now they don't know what's going to happen.
Yep. And me and my buddies, we used to have, you know, all watch the shows together. We'd put like $5 all in the pool or something, and we'd all guess the matches. Whoever had the most points would win. So when you did have an upset or something, you know, we would, you know, obviously we had a little bit something invested in it, but it was just something fun kind of do on the side. It wasn't big money, but, you know, it was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it wasn't unbelievable that Juvy could beat him because Juvy was a very talented wrestler / luchador. And if you looked at it, if it was a fight, you would have picked Conan.
Mm-hmm. Now, Raven's Flock is shown at ringside, and they're not going to be wrestling on the show, but they're going to be at ringside. Raven himself will be wrestling on the show a little bit later. But what do you think about putting them in the crowd and kind of doing it that way? Because they're not just shown in the crowd, they're not shown. I mean, they're just like hanging out in the crowd all night.
Yeah, it goes that they had that gang mentality that Raven was so good at. And I've said this before, Raven's a very smart guy. You know, I didn't come up with that idea. He came up with that idea.
The next matchup, and we'll get to Raven in that in a second when we get to this match, because we'll go back to that. But the next matchup, Chris Jericho defeats Dean Malenko by submission, retaining his WCW Cruiserweight Championship at 14 minutes and 42 seconds. What do you think about Jericho winning here with the Lion Tamer?
I like finishes. You know, I might have been a little bit influenced by UFC too, because UFC started to take off about this time, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the tap out thing, and we did it with a wrestling move that Chris came up with the name the Lion Tamer. It made the hold believable, especially doing it to Malenko, who was the man of the thousand holds. So, and let's face it, they had an incredible match.
And an incredible feud. These two, I mean, there was just very intense. Jericho would make fun of his father, you know, make fun of his brother, make fun of his family, really, really went hard after Stinko Malenko. A lot of good stuff from those two.
Yeah, and I think the way Jericho did that, it brought the best interviews out of Dean. Because, you know, Dean was the Iceman. And because of Jericho talking family, it really worked for Dean.
It was so cool because such different personalities. Malenko's very serious. And then, of course, Jericho's the man of 1,004 holds, making fun of Malenko. And then he's got that list with all the holds that he's going to kind of go through and name. So it's really like a good build here of everyone kind of wanting Jericho to get his comeuppance. But he beats Malenko again. So Malenko is on a bit of a losing streak.
Yeah, but we kind of knew that they were going to get their due. So if you know where a guy is going and you have a plan for him, it isn't hard to, as long as you keep your word, it isn't hard for them to know, okay, this is a bill for me.
Yep. Hey, makes sense. The funny thing about this also is after the match, Mean Gene comes out to the ring, interviews Malenko, says, hey, you've lost four consecutive pay-per-views. What the hell is going on here? Where do you go from here? And Malenko just says, home, and then leaves.
Yeah.
What was the design here? Did you want him to, you know, quote unquote, fake retire and then have a big return?
No, I wanted him to show the disappointment of losing. If, and Gene was so good at this, if this was legit and this was UFC or boxing and you lost four fights in a row, what would you be thinking about?
Retirement.
Yeah. Without him saying that.
It's just great the way Mean Gene kind of confronts him, too. It's not like sugarcoating it. He's like, you lost four in a row. Where the hell do you go from here? What's going on with you? You're a loser. You know, he really kind of hits home, and it really looks like Malenko's depressed and may retire.
Yeah. Yeah. And Dean did an incredible job. And Gene, like you said, almost came out of character, because that wasn't Gene's character to almost belittle somebody.
Yeah, he was upset. You know, I guess Malenko's a very upset. But Jericho, it's great because the heel momentum just keeps on rolling for him, and he becomes a bigger asshole each and every week he comes out. I mean, he was on a roll at this point. I mean, Monday Night Jericho doing the opening. He was awesome in 98.
And he was on his game so well. Sometimes it's like, I read a book one time. It's called The Psychic Side of Sports. And Michael Jordan said when he got hot, it looked like the rim was a hula hoop and he could shoot the ball and the ball was a ping pong and he knew it was going in. Jericho was in that mode then. He could see exactly where he wanted to go. And usually when that happens, you see things that nobody else sees. And he was really on top of his game again, like I said. And you put it great when you said he became a real asshole. And it came over that he was an asshole. So he really, really was on top of it. I mean, he was so on top of his stuff. He could have wrestled, if we had given him a little bit bigger build, he could have wrestled Hogan.
Sure, Hogan would have shot that down with a blaze of glory.
Yes.
But would have been awesome. Yeah, would have been great. As far as, you know, Jericho in 98 with Malenko, that story will continue. And we'll get a nice, in the coming months, a nice little surprise from Dean at Slamboree. But that's great, great feud. I actually asked Jericho, and he says his two best feuds, he said Shawn Michaels and Dean Malenko. So
Dean was another guy that he was not appreciated as much as he should have been. He never had a bad match. He worked extremely hard. And I don't think I ever saw a match that was just so-so from Dean.
Excellent, excellent. One of the best. There's no doubt about it. Probably, arguably, you know, top five greatest technical wrestlers of all time. Easily, it's in my book. The next matchup, Lex Luger, the total package, defeats Scott Steiner. Short match, only goes about 4 minutes. Do you remember the thought process here? Was something cut for time, or what was going on?
Scott was hurt at the time. You know, Scott started to have some injuries, and the worst thing you can do is when you're hurt to go in. Guys will try to gut it out. And the more they gut it out, the more likely they are to get hurt worse. You don't want a guy like Scott Steiner on the shelf. So again, this was a little bit of a swerve to the people. It only went 4 minutes, made Luger look terrific.
Yep.
But it was absolutely to keep Scott healthy.
And I was just talking to somebody last night about Scott Steiner, and Scott had told them there was only two injuries he didn't have in his career. So basically he said he tore his bicep, he tore his ACL. Like, he had so many injuries. It was just crazy. His back, threw his back out, destroyed his foot at one point. I mean, so many injuries.
Yeah, he had so many injuries. Because you got to realize, I mean, he was all muscle. And at this time of his life, he must have been 275, correct? And
yep,
when he wrestled amateur, wasn't he 170?
I don't think he was a heavyweight. I remember him being a lighter. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So he had,
no, definitely not 275. That's super heavyweight. Yeah.
He had put 100 pounds of muscle on, and tendons get strained, ligaments get strained, and he was still, at that time, doing high flying risk moves too.
Man, if you just look at him from the early 90s to like the late 90s, obviously big change in his gimmick. He's Big Papa Pump. And obviously, maybe even more over, obviously, his Big Papa Pump, and he was awesome. But as Scott Steiner in the early 90s, what a freak athlete. Man, he could do things. Frankensteiner, that he'd have Ron Simmons like this and just do a 360 with Ron in his arms. Like, man, freakish strength and probably the most athletic guy I've ever seen. I mean, for that size, insane.
I can't disagree with you at all. I mean, you're absolutely right. For his size, and he was freaky strong, and to do that to Ron Simmons, who was a legit 280-pounder. I mean, Ron Simmons, to my knowledge to this day, he's the highest defensive lineman ever to be that high for a Heisman Trophy candidate.
Yeah.
I think he was fifth, wasn't he?
I don't remember the exact number, but it was impressive as hell. It's like, wow, yeah, that'll never happen again. Like,
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah.
Great athlete. The next matchup, DDP, a Diamond Dallas Page, defeats Raven and a Chris Benoit in a triple threat match, retaining his WWE United States Championship match in about 16 minutes. Bring up Raven and his flock again. Obviously, you know, they always want to get involved and always will get involved. But great match, DDP, Raven, and Benoit.
You know, that match could have been a main event match anywhere in the world. I mean, the stuff these guys were doing, and it wasn't just moves, there was psychology in the whole match, which is very hard when you have three individuals in it. And they pulled that off amazing. Amazing.
They do tease a crazy spot where a table is in the middle of the ring. Benoit teases he's going to superplex Paige off the top onto the table. Paige gets out of it, gets Benoit out of the way. Diamond cutters Raven through the table and gets the win. I feel like the undercard or the mid-card or the upper mid-card in WCW on fire at this point. Not always would you get the main event, you know, home run or a great match. The mid-card guys like DDP, Raven, Benoit always had good matches.
Yeah, and they set the table for the main event, which was their job. I mean, these guys, I got to give them all credit from the first match we talked about till now. Everybody was trying to steal the show, and each one did in his own way.
Man, DDP at this point, obviously 97, just coming off the feud of the year with the Macho Man. Then now he's the United States Championship. He's on quite a bit of a run, and then match with Hogan and, you know, continue his push. And obviously, like we mentioned, Bash at the Beach being in the main event. So it's quite a good year, 1998, for DDP. He's on the rise in 1998.
Yes. And I get to give him all the credit in the world. He started very late. It's almost impossible to start that late. He's one of those guys that believed in himself, knew he could do it, and he wasn't going to be outworked. And my hats go off to him to this day.
He's awesome. One of the best. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Now, the next matchup, the Giant defeats Kevin Nash by disqualification in about 6 minutes and 30 seconds. Bryan Adams uses the baseball bat to hit the Giant and causes the DQ. This is a rematch from Sold Out. What do you think here with the DQ schmaz finish?
Well, first of all, in my head, Kevin was the leader of the NWO. The Giant was the salvation for WCW. I didn't think we probably could have done a better DQ, but I didn't want to beat either one of them, and I certainly didn't want to take any steam off the NWO. You got to realize they're the ones that got us to the dance. And it was to protect the NWO. Kevin would have done the job, but I thought it would have been the wrong thing. In hindsight, I still think it would have been the wrong thing. So I took the line of least resistance. The problem would have been if Kevin lost, I believe a heel could lose and then get his heat back. But how do you get your heat back when the Giant would have had a choke slam Kevin to beat him? And how could Kevin jump up after a choke slam from the Giant and get his heat back? A lot of things go into finishes, okay? We had built the Giant up that the choke slam, if you remember when he choke slammed people and covered them, they laid there.
Yep.
I didn't want the head of the NWO laying down. So Brian was brand new. They had just put him in there. So it got Brian into the mix. And it didn't hurt anybody, but maybe if I look back at it, I think the Giant could have taken a loss easier than Kevin. But how do you beat a Giant? So you're in a rock in a hard place. So sometimes you do things that you say, what's the least harm I could do to these two guys? And that, to me, was the least harm I could do. And it also got Brian into the mix.
What did you think about signing Brian Adams? Too many guys at this point? Did you really need him?
Well, I think they were trying to hire anybody that had anything to do with the WWE. It looked like, at that period, to our fans, that WWE was losing momentum. Did the NWO needed Brian Adams? No, I think Brian Adams could have got over on his own. But I think, again, which I've said to nauseam, I think the NWO should have been the four, you know, or Scott Steiner. But that wasn't to be, so we went with the best we could. And having Brian in there, as I keep repeating, it's you got to do something with him if he's in it.
Yeah. I just, as a fan, was like, oh, man, this is like overkill now. Another guy shows up from WWF. Now he's in the NWO. It's too much, too many guys.
Yep, yep. And you're right. I agree with you 1,000%.
I feel like, you know, at some point it's overkill, but is that a Bischoff call or who's making the call to put him in the NWO?
I think it's Eric was starting to think that, and I wasn't privy to some of this knowledge. I think Eric was almost thinking about splitting and having two different shows. So he was hiring guys because that's what his thought process was. I think we'll have two different shows. We'll have a WCW show and an NWO show. But that would have been hard to do because that meant the NWO had to almost go over in every match if it was an NWO show, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we all make mistakes. And looking back, you know, we can say, yeah, we made a mistake there. So, yeah, we made a mistake.
Yeah, Bischoff always says he always wanted to kind of make it a WCW and then make an NWO, their own show. You need them both together, to me, you know, to make it work and make it successful.
Right, right. Well, I'll give you a real simple example. Could you imagine if the NFL and AFL didn't merge? We wouldn't have a Super Bowl.
Right.
So that I think that we got, you know, I think we all think sometimes more is better. My thought is less is more.
Agreed. Yep. The next matchup, Brett the Hitman Hart defeats Curt Hennig with Rick Rude by submission with the sharpshooter in about 14 minutes. What'd you think about this one? This obviously isn't, you know, Brett versus Mr. Perfect of 1991 or King of the Ring 1993, but, you know, a decent match. Maybe you expect a little bit more from these two. What'd you think?
You know, I just found out something recently. Brett's back, I mean, not Brett, Curt's back was really still bad. Curt's back was really still bad. Curt, to me, was one of the great workers of his generation. But injuries take a toll. And when you're hurt, especially your back, you have a tendency to, in your mind, you're working, you're saying, oh, I can't do that. My back is bothering me. Because the guys are going to the ring in pain, first of all. And then do you really want to get hurt so bad you're not going to be able to work? So I think we got the best we could have out of Curt and Brett.
Yeah, I don't know how healthy Brett was at this point. He seemed like he was, but he might have been a little bit injured as well. But Curt definitely had the bad back and the knee problem, and he had a couple of injuries at this point. He looked great physically, but you could tell he was in some pain out there.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the bad thing. Pain is a killer. I mean, I've been hurt bad in my career, my neck, in my shoulders, and I know that there was a time I took a bump that I swore I shouldn't have took. And I said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. And maybe it was that I self-prophesized myself. I hurt my neck worse and I was out for a while. So that's always in a guy's mind that's been hurt. And like you said, I didn't realize Curt's knee was bad. So he's going in there with a bad knee, a bad back, and no base. The thing that I prided myself on when I wrestled was my legs. I had like 36-inch thighs. I squatted over 800 pounds. So I knew I was all right. But once I hurt my neck, I don't care how strong your legs are, your neck and back, you start to worry because it can be a very, very precarious situation and you start to try to protect yourself on a bump and you land wrong.
True. Dangerous stuff. The next matchup, Sting, the WWE World Heavyweight Champion, defeats Scott Hall with Dusty Rhodes to retain the WWE title in about 8 minutes and 30 seconds. What do you think here? First of all, Sting is the world champion, and he's not in the main event.
Again, creative control plays a lot to do this. My personal belief, the main event is the world title match. But the other thing is, you got to get the cage down. So if you put the cage down and then got to bring it up, you know what I mean? Before the main event comes, it takes away from the show. So on this placement, I agree with them.
Now, did you ever think, I know this is in the midst of Sting just wins the title back from Hogan after that disaster at Starrcade 97, and then, you know, leading up to it, it's like, what's going to happen with the title? They have the rematch at Super Brawl. Sting officially wins back the title. Did you ever think about putting the title on Scott Hall?
No.
Never. Why not?
Yeah. Problems. You know, they were starting to have some problems with Scott. And there was one time they were going to send Scott to Japan to finish his contract, which was just heat. Do you know what I mean? It was heat. I don't even know the situation, what caused it. But Scott Hall should have been a world champion in my book.
Yep.
Scott should have been a champion. And that was, had nothing to do with outside activities with Scott because they weren't prevalent then. But somehow there was some heat there. And when I got wind that they would maybe send him to Japan to finish his contract, boy, I was thinking, to get that kind of heat, something was said, and could this happen? No, I don't think so. But I certainly wouldn't want it to happen on my watch. Should Scott have been world champion? Absolutely. If I had my druthers and the power to do it, did anybody look better than Scott Hall in the wrestling business at that time?
Not many.
And could anybody talk like Scott?
No, not many. Again, he was the man.
He was the man.
Maybe not at this point, because Sting had just won the title and just like dethroned Hogan in the NWO. So maybe here wouldn't be the perfect timing, like no. You said, the back and the backstage stuff. But yeah, in his career, definitely should have been world champion.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think I would have loved to have seen Scott, because the thing that people don't realize, Scott to me is one of the greatest performers, not of his generation, of all the generations I've been around. He could brawl. He could technically wrestle. He took unbelievable bumps. And his ring intelligence was up there with anybody I ever saw. I certainly would like to have been the guy that put the title on him. I would have been proud to do it.
It's one of those things, another guy, like, man, he could have been a world champion. He's definitely at the top of the list of guys that probably should have won the world title. But you mentioned the cage match and bringing the cage down. Hollywood Hulk Hogan fights Macho Man Randy Savage with Miss Elizabeth to a no contest in about 15 minutes in the steel cage match. Kind of weird to have a no contest in a steel cage. And the DQ in the cage match, which is a little strange. What was that about? How come there's no clean finish?
It sucked. Didn't they get out of the cage a bunch of times and fight the floor?
It was a weird kind of setup for the match. It didn't quite make as much sense as you think. And obviously the clean finish just kill it.
Didn't they get out of the cage too? And fight?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, let me ask you something, John. You and I have been wrestling fans forever. Isn't it a cage to keep people in the ring?
Yes.
That's so nobody can run and get out?
And so nobody can get in either, so you would think.
What's worse? A match they tried to do and it didn't work, the explosions didn't come off, or advertising a cage where people are fighting on the floor and we have a DQ.
True. Both equally as bad. And then to throw
No, I got to disagree with you. Ours was much worse.
Really? Okay.
Because I'll tell you why. That wasn't the wrestler's fault. That was whoever set that exploding cage up.
Right. Good point. Good point. And this you're saying is whoever's doing the match or whoever's.
It's like they've not ever seen a cage.
Yeah. And even worse than that, the disciple comes in and interferes. He knocks out the ref. Then basically he stops Savage from beating up Hogan. Then Sting comes out, who you think is there to help Macho Man, considering that they were kind of building them up as friends. All of a sudden, Savage then attacks Sting. So what was going on here?
Ego.
Right.
Let me ask you something. We have this time and time again, we talk about this. Is this another Randy Savage getting screwed?
Yes, especially since he's going to be winning the title coming up. And, you know, he doesn't get the win here against Hogan in the cage. It's just a DQ cage schmoz finish, which you don't really see for cage matches.
You shouldn't. You're advertising the end of the angle. I know in two shows from now, SWE Fury is having a cage match. I can tell you this. There won't be a DQ, and there won't be people running in, and there will be a straight finish because it's in a cage. It's a fight to the finish. What was that?
Yeah, I don't quite get that. How could you escape the cage, but the cage is supposed to be there so people can't get in, can't get out, and Hogan and Savage are brawling on the outside of the ring? Yeah, it doesn't really make a lot of sense.
How'd you like to be me in the background watching that?
And it makes Sting look really bad. He comes out, and all of a sudden Savage then turns on him.
Not only does it make Sting look bad, it certainly makes the company look like a bunch of idiots.
And in the match, I mean, they're trying hard. They're going all out. Savage goes from the top of the cage and lands an awesome double drop there. Just one of those things where it's like, man, you really want Savage to win this one and finally get a win over Hogan.
Yeah. That's why I say, is this Randy getting? It reminds me, are you a Peanuts fan, the cartoon?
Oh, yeah.
Lucy holding the football? Come on, Charlie. I swear I won't move it.
Yep. And it's the ending is basically, so Disciple is in the ring with Hogan, and you think it's going to be a square off Sting and Savage against Disciple and Hogan. Then all of a sudden, Savage turns on Sting, and then Savage is now with Hogan again after that whole fight and that whole feud and everything else. This, I'm guessing, wasn't your idea.
No, it wasn't. It was not my idea. Creative control. And let me ask you this. I've hated this from day one. First time I ever saw a wrestling match. Would you jump off a fucking cage and that high, and it was a ploy to get Sting in there?
Right.
I mean, it was so bogus. It was so bogus. And again, I go back to that match that it didn't explode. Well, it wasn't the wrestler's fault. They did what they thought that was going to happen. These guys, or whoever, took it on their own to make them believe there was no cage there.
Yep. And Savage doesn't necessarily join Hogan at that moment either. It's interesting. Right. Savage turns on Sting, then he spits on Hogan and leaves the cage. And that's kind of like the end of the show with Hogan and Savage arguing with each other back and forth. But it's weird. It's like there's no finish, just a schmoz. But Savage laid out Sting kind of, we don't really know why. I guess he wants the title. You know, he wants to be champion, but he's not really with Hogan. So what was the point of that ending?
Lucy moved the football. That's the point.
So this is all the Hulkster? The creative control?
Yep.
Man, what a show. I don't know. What do you kind of think overall of this show? The ending kind of killed it for me a little bit, but Booker versus Eddie was good. Hoovy against Conan was good. Jericho Malenko was great. I liked the U.S. title match. What'd you kind of think overall of the pay-per-view?
The undercard was great. The main event left a lot to be desired.
Always kind of happened at WCW at this point. It was like the main event was starting to get a little disappointing month after month.
Yes. And not just disappointing, getting to be ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a cage is a cage. So, I don't understand that. I never did, never will. So
I think to me, thumbs maybe in the middle, undercard good, pay-per-view ending wasn't that great.
Thank you for watching the Hannibal TV. Please like this video if you enjoyed it and click the subscribe button to not miss any of our latest shoot interviews, match videos, or news updates. Support us on patreon.com for $1.99 a month to watch our full shoot interviews ad-free and help our channel grow. Follow us on Twitter at The Hannibal TV for instant updates.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPT Empire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother. College football fans, are you ready for week one? DraftKings Sportsbook is hooking you up with a can't-miss offer to start the season strong. This week, new customers can bet just $5 on college football and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Anything can happen in college football. That's right. Your team could go from unranked to dynasty mode in just a couple of years. Change comes fast. The only thing that's a lock is great offers from the DraftKings Sportsbook. Life's more fun when you're in on the action. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code TASKMASTER, all lowercase. New customers can score $200 in bonus bets instantly when they bet just $5 on college football. Only DraftKings Sportsbook is the way to go, and use that promo code TASKMASTER, then the crown is yours. That's right. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use that promo code TASKMASTER. Own it, live it, win the crown.
We love the 1980s wrestling era, when kayfabe was king and wrestling did whatever it took to protect the business. When all the territories dealt with the rise of the WWF and the NWA emerged as its greatest challenger. Imagine if there were an epic drama series based on that era, combining the corporate warfare and family drama of Succession with the giant cast and epic storytelling of Game of Thrones. That day has come. Kings of the Ring is the first audio drama podcast based on wrestling.
Go back to your trailer, you hillbilly.
It's a fiction series about the 1980s wrestling wars and the sex, drugs, and muscles lifestyle of the 80s wrestler and the sacrifices they make for success. With guest voice acting appearances by Lanny Poffo.
I even have a good dropkick.
And AEW's RJ City.
I didn't really have that much to do.
Search Kings of the Ring from any podcast app or kingsotr.com and binge away.